Programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, dedicated to defining spaces and creating downtown places across the Midwest, on the web at ratioarchitects.com. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming families for Michael Cooper's extraordinary Masks and Storytelling. The pageantry of the pipes, drums, and Highland dancers of the Black Watch and the Band of the Welsh Guards, and a musical journey out of this world with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. Visit KrannertCenter.com for more information.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly discussion about computers. It's a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Peter Kimball is our guest this month. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the Fast 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. Listeners, I welcome your questions about computers for Peter Kimball. Join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, use the toll-free number. That is 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back to the program, Peter.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, the Mac with the Intel chip is due out next month. What's the benefit, if any, for Apple consumers?
Well, it's going to be a little bit faster. It is going to be eventually, most likely possible with the next release of Windows called Windows Vista, to have a dual boot machine so that you could bring up Windows Vista or you could bring up the Mac OS. And as more and more software is written to take advantage of the Intel chips on the Macintosh, performance will improve.
And there's also a new Mac laptop, the MacBook Pro, coming out
next
month.
Notice
what's the word on that?
The word PowerBook is it's no longer going to be PowerBook. The power has disappeared, even though that came before the PowerPC chips. So it's going to be another machine with the same technology. Eventually, Macs, Apple will move to Intel processors. So the old G4, G5 chips will no longer be sold after they've made the transition, which will probably be by the end of this year.
Now, with these new machines, will there be any problem running existing software?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
If anybody is still out there, and there hopefully aren't too many, running the old Mac System 9 classic Mac software, those will not run under any circumstances on these new Macs. So it's time to update that software. You've had 4 or 5 years to do so. It's now time to bite the bullet or keep with your old machine. Some of the other software is going to have to be recompiled and rewritten. Final Cut, for example, a lot of people use Final Cut Pro. That won't be available to run on the new Macs until sometime probably after the 1st of April.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener. We've got a caller waiting for us on line one in Ashmore. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Listen, I have a Microsoft Millennium software on my computer, and I'd kind of like to go to Office, upgrade it. And can I do that without cleaning the disk? If I just buy the Office software, can I go right to Office and wipe out my Millennium, or do I have to go through and wipe
it? So you're currently running Windows Millennium Edition, then?
Yes, uh-huh.
A lot of the question we have to answer is, do you have enough available disk space to put the entire Office suite on there, which should run fine with Millennium Edition? Is going to require a lot of available hard drive space, and you'll need to see how much space you've got.
I've got a 40
gigabyte drive.
Yeah, 40.
Well, the question is, how much of that space is actually free and available to you?
One-third of it now.
It will probably, and what you want to do is you want to install the most recent version of Office, staying with your current operating system, or were you also wanting to upgrade to, like, Windows XP or something?
Well, yeah, the way it is now, my Millennium has given me so many problems. I'm having trouble with the systems, and I have to continue to go in and straighten up the system all the time.
Right.
And I would prefer to go to Windows Office rather than anything else?
Well, there are two things you're talking about then. One is actually upgrading to the newer version of Windows, which would be Windows XP, Windows XP Home, for example.
Okay, how about XP Office?
There's a little bit of confusion in terms.
Okay.
The underlying operating system, Windows itself, is either and you're using Windows Millennium Edition or Windows ME, which is known to have some stability problems. The current versions of the Windows software itself is called Windows XP. It comes in two flavors, Windows XP Home and Windows XP Professional. But that's not any of your word processing or any of the other Office applications. That's Windows itself.
Okay.
The current version of Microsoft Office is called Office 2003. That's what's including Microsoft Word 2003, PowerPoint, Excel, and all of those applications. The confusion is there was in the previous version of Microsoft Office, it was called Microsoft Office XP, which got all sorts of people confused about, is it Windows XP, is it Office XP, or are they one and the same? You're looking at two entirely different animals here. One is Windows itself, and that would be typically currently Windows XP. And the other is Microsoft Office, which includes all of your word processing and other applications. And that current version is called Office 2003.
Okay. That's where I mixed up. You're absolutely right. But I could go to Windows XP probably and load it right on to...
Yes, it would replace the Windows ME. The problem you need to check, depending on how recent the machine is, it may or may not have adequate hardware support. It may not have the muscle and the power to do a really good job with Windows XP. There may be some other compatibilities, but Microsoft has at their website little utilities and guides. Essentially, is your computer ready for Windows XP?
Yeah.
With a 40 gigabyte hard drive, you're going to be running, and only about a third of that space left. It's certainly enough space to run both Windows and Office, but you're not going to have a lot of extra space, so there may need to be some cleaning up of old files and old applications that you're not using.
Okay, that answers my problem, and I thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Bye.
Other questions are invited for Peter Kimball. This is Computers and You today on the Afternoon Magazine. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. No one waiting at the moment. Well, what is the, you know, you mentioned muscle. What's the minimum muscle you want to have today? And I suppose the answer is going to be, well, it depends what you want to do. But, you know, what's the range and you know, what do you need for, you know, the basic, what's the basic muscle?
Well, almost any machine you can buy new today is going to have more than enough muscle. By muscle, I guess what we'll mean is the processing speed, how quickly can the computer perform tasks, and that has to do with the chip inside. It's Intel inside, or it's the Macintosh Power PC G4 or G5 inside. And almost any of those will be fine for word processing, for surfing the internet, for email and such. The one concern is a lot of machines are somewhat limited on their internal memory, so-called RAM memory. They may be sold or perhaps were sold with 128 megabytes of RAM, and that's not really enough now. Mm. 256 is really the bare minimum, and 512 would be better. And any newer machine, especially if somebody got a new machine for the holidays, they may only come with 256 or 512 because that's how they can be sold more cheaply. But really, those machines ought to be taken up to at least a gigabyte. That's 1,000 megabytes.
Okay. Let's go and talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Yeah, I'm a Macintosh user. I have an iBook G4. The hard drive just failed on it, and I'm actually sending it back in. It's under warranty, so not going to be out too much trouble here. But I'm actually wondering if you can – I lost some data because I just didn't have room to back it up. Most of the important stuff I backed up. But I'm wondering if you could recommend an external hard drive for backup purposes because I've – read reviews, and some of them seem to have a lot more problems, but then you'll read about the same one, and People seem to love it. Do you have any recommendations for that?
Well, I don't have a real specific recommendation. I presume that that your notebook has a USB port, so yeah. It would be just about any machine, any external hard drive. There is. Are you running this by any chance on a home network?
We have a home wireless network.
Well, there's an interesting new product, and I'm not making a real specific recommendation for a particular brand, but this is something that was just announced. It should be out this spring. It was announced at the Consumer Electronics Show. It's from MacStore, but other drive manufacturers will do it, and it's shared storage for home network. It's an external hard drive. You simply plug it into one of the wired ports in the back of your wireless router with an Ethernet cable, and then every machine in the network can use any place between the 200 and 500 gigabytes that are on this drive. So that's kind of an interesting way of going, rather than having a machine, external hard drive that may be only suitable for one machine or conveniently used with one, have one that's available to your entire network. They estimate that the price on this is going to be someplace in the vicinity of $300 to $500, depending on whether you want 250 to 500 gigabytes of storage, and it should be out later this spring. So that's an interesting thing to consider. As far as other external hard drives, again, it sounds like you're already doing what you need to do. Just do a web search for external USB hard drives and then take a look, modify that search with the word review and see if you can get a general sense. But most of the major manufacturers, MacStore and Seagate and the others, should be no problem. And, of course, don't count on it being perfect all the time. Hard drives fail, so continue to make backups to things like DVDs or CD-ROMs.
Are you aware of there being any issues with iBooks as compared to the regular G4 PowerBooks? Are iBooks just the lower quality? I've never had a problem like this with the Macintosh.
I'd hate to say that they're lower quality, less expensive, but no, I wouldn't say they're lower quality. There's going to be a certain failure rate for any machine, and Apple in general is pretty good, but that still means things are going to fail.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Okay, next we talk with a listener in Lafayette on line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a question concerning memory, but not so much in the computer, but when you're emailing and the software that you're using. Take any kind of photograph that's like a 0.6 megapixel image, and the minute you put it in Microsoft Publisher, it jumps to a 5.5 meg image. And when you go to email somebody with not a DSL or cable system, it just takes them forever to download it. And I was curious whether your guest had any reason for that. We're almost through using photographs on the Internet because of this.
Well, I'm not specifically familiar with that problem with Microsoft Publisher, but I do know that in Microsoft Word, and so one would assume that we're fairly similar, Word takes, at least the current versions of Word, it's supposed to get better with the next release, they take an image and repackage it, store it internally in their file, and that's a very inefficient process. And so the better solution to try to send these... So what you're wanting to do is you're wanting to put this together into some kind of a display, some kind of a document with Publisher, and then email that Publisher document.
Correct.
One way to deal with that, although it's not going to be quite as elegant, would be to just use an email program and send the documents as attachments rather than in a whole Publisher file.
That's kind of what we're thinking about doing, and I was just hoping that there was something a little smoother that wouldn't...
Well, there may be in Publisher, but I'm unaware. It's not a program that I use. The other thing that you can do...
A lot much more either.
Right. Assuming that the people to whom you're sending these emails aren't going to be printing them particularly, they're just going to be looking at them on their screen, as you had mentioned, because you're sending, like... 0.6 megabyte files, you really don't want to have the image any larger than is going to fit on their screen. So that means probably no more than about 1,000 by 700 pixels, and it could be quite a bit less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And if the images start out larger than that, any photo editing program, not only the big ones like Photoshop, but any of the free shareware ones, could certainly reduce the size of the image, what's called resampling.
That's the mystery. The picture is less than 1 megapixel from the camera.
And then it bloats the publisher file. And that's because, although I can't tell you detailed how to get around this, Word also does it. It's because publisher re-encodes that thing and stores it internally and does it very inefficiently.
Okay, that's the problem.
These images are probably JPEGs in their original format, which is a compressed file format, and my guess is that inside publisher they're no longer compressed.
That's probably the problem right there. Okay. Well, we're going to keep working at it, but it's a problem that evidently you've come up with.
Right. Well, one other possible approach to this is from any of the various free internet sites, Yahoo and Google and various other places where you can actually have some files, store the images, upload the images there, and then just email to your recipients a link to those pages.
Now, that's a good idea. Yeah. I haven't thought about that.
And there are a lot of people who do that, and there are a lot of different sites that will support that. So, and of course, that eliminates a lot of these concerns on your part.
That's possibly the answer right there. Okay,
great.
Well, I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign, line 2. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Okay.
I've got a question on the Windows system. I'm running, I think, a Windows 98 on a machine, older machine designed for 95 that my brother upgraded somehow.
Uh-huh.
And he insisted on plugging into broadband with, he came back from an overseas trip and hadn't updated his virus protection in 10 months. So by the time he took off, it had 38 viruses on it.
Uh-huh, that's what can happen.
I managed to get to Griffsoft to get some free antivirus software from 38 Trojan horses and a few Windows viruses. Problem is now, I guess the Windows files are damaged beyond repair. I've got like 5 or 6 with a WinNet DLL as a file name that are damaged. Now I can't do anything at all other than update the Griffsoft. I guess it's got its own little browser attached to it. Is there somewhere to go where you can get the corrupt files and get patches for them without having to spend lots of money?
Well, let's see. WinNet DLL is part of a Trojan, so it is not... Really, now, is it WinNet or WININET.DLL? So WININET.DLL is a Windows system file. That's presumably...
That would be... I'm sorry, I'm looking at the Windows files now. The other ones were Trojans that have been taken care of, but these
right,
are...
but this is... But the problem is with WININET.DLL, then.
Right, and the AVG is saying they can't repair the...
The
backups are also corrupt.
Let me see here. WinINET. So what you can do is actually, yes, I just did a Google search for WinINET.DLL, and there's actually, from a site that I've heard of before, dll-files.com, you can download WinINET.DLL from there. You need to be a little bit careful with some of this, but... you're not going to be any worse off than you are now, certainly, and many of these sites that are
right.
available.
My other option is Linux, because I'm not in a position to be paying money for anything at all. Right.
Well, many of those DLLs, including WinINET.DLL, just make sure you don't ever download WinNet.DLL, because that's a Trojan. But the WinINET.DLL, there are sites where you can simply download that. That's assuming that you don't still have your... The other way of doing it, of course, would be if you still have the original install disks from Win98.
No.
Okay. So, yes, you can try that. Do get virus protection on there. I presume you already have.
Right. That's what I got from the AVG.
Right. And keep that updated as well. It's at some point you're going to have to make a decision. There are no security patches currently being published for Windows 98. It's beyond its shelf life.
So
the time will come when you'll have to make a move. But that, as you say, that could be to Linux or it could be at some point to some version of Windows, depending upon what your needs are and what your finances are.
Okay.
But
right,
yes, you can download the DLLs.
All right.
Quite welcome.
Good luck. Caller in Champaign, line 3. Good afternoon. Line 3. Hi there.
Hi there. I have a virus question myself.
Okay.
It's the first time I've ever had one. A couple members of my family are using my computer, and I had AOL with their McAfee virus scanner, and then I also have a competing one now with the SBC Global with a broadband connection, and they're all saying there's a Trojan horse thing, but nobody tells us how to what to do. And so I don't know what you do. It says a virus has been found on your computer, but it doesn't say how to fix it.
Well, so on your computer, you actually have installed on your computer which version of virus software. AOL typically scans files as they're sent to you, but that's not necessarily. Do you know if you've got McAfee software installed on your machine?
No, it said that it came with that system. It said that now you have a virus detector. Is that not a McAfee?
Well, no, that could be. There are several companies. If it says you've got this, now if the message you're getting says there was a virus detected on, you know, this file or something, the implication is that it caught it and isolated it and said, hey, by the way, we've got this virus and we took care of it for you. What you probably want to do in addition to or instead of, but at least in addition to, depending upon the virus scanning that's done remotely, would be, and you may want to check under your programs menu, because you could quite possibly already have either some version of McAfee virus protection software installed on your machine. If not, I would strongly urge you to either get McAfee or Norton or any of the other virus protection software packages. They're relatively cheap, $20 typically, and that gives you virus definition updates that will be updated for the next year or so, and run that and see, do a complete system scan and see what it says. There's one other bit of warning. You will sometimes at some websites, although since you're getting this from a couple of places, I doubt this is the case for you, but sometimes you'll get a little pop-up message that says your machine has been infected, virus detected, and sometimes from unscrupulous websites, those are pop-up messages that are designed to get you to click and download something that actually is a virus.
Oh.
So you want to make...
One confusion I have is when we got the SBC Global, it keeps asking us to put its virus scanner on, and so it seems like, do I have to disable those to install the Norton?
You only want to be running on installed on your machine. You really only want to be running one version of a virus scanner at a time. You don't want to be running, for example, both SBC's and Norton, or McAfee's and Norton is not giving you twice the protection. They're going to tend to interfere with one another and slow things down. So yes, you would want to run just one of them. And SBC's, if that is your current internet provider, and I don't know off the top of my head which software package they're using, but from what you say, it sounds like it's McAfee. And that would be fine. And if indeed this is legitimately from SBC, you just go directly to that SBC Yahoo DSL site and you get that prompt. So it's not just some random web page that's saying click here. Then you would be certainly safe in downloading that. If there is other antivirus software installed, you would want to remove that. You really only want to be running one antivirus software at a time.
Okay. So if it says that it's isolated, that means that it's taken care of.
If it's isolated, it's taken care of. Yeah.
Okay, because we thought that maybe it was like, I remember with Norton, there's like you had to do something.
Yeah, with Norton and McAfee, you can control. You can say, go ahead and just isolate it or quarantine it and then just let me know, or don't even let me know, or give me the option of whether to isolate it or not. And so those are simply settings. So that's why Norton may appear to do things differently than McAfee.
All right, I think I'll get
But if
Norton.
It said isolated, you're in pretty good shape.
Thank you for your help.
Uh-huh.
Next we go to Eureka, listener on line 1. Hi.
Hi, could I ask one major and two small questions?
Sure.
I'm running a compact that's about 6 years old, and I think it's getting near the end of its usefulness. I'm wondering if you give me some guidelines on buying another one. I guess you don't give specific models, but you said, for instance, that you thought that either 512 was a minimum memory, and so it can be expanded up to 1,000, is it megabytes?
Yes, and 1,000 megabytes is generally 1 gigabyte. So that could be referred to as either way. Sure. Do you want to, are you now the compact that you've got, notebook or desktop?
Desktop.
For the desktop, and since you're going to be presumably staying on the Windows side of things, almost any of the major companies will be fine. I mean, there's Dell, there's Hewlett-Packard, there's Gateway, all of those.
Do you have a preference?
What I would do is just look at those various, pick out two or three, look at what they have to offer, compare their machines with your budget. You'll definitely want, although most of them in their minimum configuration will not have 512 or megabytes of RAM or a gigabyte, you'll definitely want to specify that as an upgrade at the time you're ordering. That's almost always cheaper than adding it later.
So you want at least 500?
I would say a minimum of 500, and if it's not beyond your budget, I'd go with a gigabyte, which is the equivalent of 1,000 megabytes of RAM. Right. These days, hard drives, it's hard to buy a machine that has less than 100 gigabytes of drive space, but you could easily go for, if some of them have 80, if it's 20 or 30 bucks to upgrade to 160 or, mm-hmm. or 250 megabytes, gigabytes rather, you'll be happy you did.
Are you looking at that? Could you give a ballpark figure, $600 to $800? Is that?
Yeah, you can do pretty well for $600 to $800. You're not going to have a speed demon of a machine. So if you're an inveterate gamer, you're not going to be happy with that.
No, but if
you're just doing standard word processing and web files and you know a little bit of photo processing, that would be fine.
Mainly Quicken word processing.
Yes, you don't really need a lot of power and speed for that.
Yeah.
You do want the memory. You want a lot of hard drive space. It's amazing how quickly that can fill up with photos and other things.
Two more smaller questions. High-speed internet. I'm using a company from Metamora that's dial-up. Do you have any preferences or any thoughts about that?
Well, high-speed internet, depending on where you live, the fastest and most convenient are either via a cable modem, or via a telephone DSL connection.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you have to live in an area that's serviced by either the telephone or the cable company that supports that. A little bit less convenient is if you're out away from that is some of the local or intermediate distance wireless networks.
Mm-hmm.
Probably least convenient, but if you really need it, are the satellite services. And, of course, the dial-up is, even though some companies do some trickery to try to speed things up a little bit, they are by far the slowest.
Uh-huh.
And if you have the option for cable or a DSL line,
yes.
That's currently the fastest.
Yeah, okay. And what is called Skypole, the telephone, long-distance telephone through the Internet, is that the accurate?
Oh, Skype?
Skype, I'm sorry.
Skype, yes. Skype is, and you can find out all sorts of things if you just go to either do a search for Skype or go to the Skype, S-K-Y-P-E, site itself.
S-K-Y-P-E?
S-K-Y-P-E.
Okay.
And, in fact, they just announced at the Consumer Electronics Show a little handheld. It's like a little cell phone, but it will automatically be an Internet-enabled phone any place that there's a wireless access point. So, and a lot of people are using that to make very inexpensive long-distance calls.
Do you know how much that particular thing sells for?
For that particular phone?
Yes.
No, I don't think that one, the one I was just telling you about, I don't know if it has, let's see.
I don't know if it's hit the marketplace yet.
Yeah, it's supposed to be available. More information, pricing and availability in coming weeks.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank
okay.
you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Next, we go to Bloomington, Indiana, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I have standard dial-up internet service, and sometimes it gives me fairly fast connections, but sometimes it becomes very slow. Now, I assume these slowdowns are caused by too many other people on the line with the same internet service provider. Is that correct?
Probably not.
Oh.
Probably not. Since you're dialing up, what's happening is your connection between your telephone and your internet service provider is, of course, not shared with anyone. It's just a standard private phone call.
Yes.
There are some things that can affect the speed there. If a phone connection, you know how sometimes when you call somebody up and you get a really noisy line?
Yes.
And then you hang up and call back? Well, that noisy line, if it happens on the call that you're making to your internet service provider, there are all kinds of errors generated by that. Things have to be retransmitted, and it can slow your speed down by 50% or more.
Oh.
So that's one possibility. That's the most likely. It is conceivable, of course, if your internet service provider is servicing, you know, thousands of people in an evening and they don't quite have enough capacity themselves for their connection to the internet. Yes, what you say is possible. Everybody will tend to slow down a little bit, but usually internet service providers, at least those with they're operating on more than a shoestring budget, will try to keep their bandwidth sufficiently high so that their customers don't notice a slowdown. That's different than, of course, people who use a cable modem. If you're on a cable modem, that's shared bandwidth, and things will slow down for everyone as more people get onto your local node, and then 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, it's really fast because most of the inveterate gamers have gone to bed by then, and they certainly aren't up by then.
Okay, with that, thank you very much.
But
okay.
I would check the quality of the phone line.
Oh, yes. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Bourbonnais. Line 2, hi.
Hi. You're speaking to a computer illiterate, first of all, so be kind. But my son tells me, because my computer is slow, that I should defragment the files. When I try to do this, it gets to about 8% and stops and then starts over. But it never gets past 8%. I think this is drive C. So what's the problem?
What version of Windows are you
on? ME.
Okay. The problem is, and I believe that this is a and are you using, I don't recall, does Windows ME have its own built-in defragmenting utility program, or are you using
Yes, it does.
One of the problems, and this may well be in ME, I don't recall specifically because that's been some time. During the defragmenting process, what can often happen is older versions of defragmenting programs, whenever they discover that there had been a change made to the hard drive, which the operating system does all the time, it says, whoa, wait a minute, something's changed. I have to start over again. Newer versions, such as the ones that run with Windows XP and such, take that into account and can handle the background changes that take place. I assume that it gets up to 8% and stops, and you're not running any other program. Everything is...
No, that's right.
But even without running other programs, Windows occasionally updates itself. And I'm not entirely sure how you're going to best solve that. When you look at the defragmenting software, does it give you an option to get a report and see how badly fragmented your hard drive is?
No. No, it doesn't.
That's probably the reason. And let me see if there is anything that I can find. Defragmenting, defragmenter. Well, all Microsoft says it is best to shut down all other programs before you run disk defragmenters. So you don't have any internet connection or anything else going on when you're doing...
No, I don't.
Okay. What I would do, and I we just don't have the time to do it right now, is do a Google search, or other search, but I'll just use Google generically, for Windows ME.
Okay.
Defragment,
all right.
And various phrases like halts or restarts. So you can see any articles that say something about Windows ME defragment restarts, and my guess is that you may find restarting. Let's see, temporarily turning off programs running in background. Do you have a screensaver running?
No.
Okay, because that just looking at this, that would be one thing that could cause it to trigger. And I see all sorts of articles when I just did that search.
Okay.
And so that may be what you find. And certainly defragmenting can help, but if you've only got 10 or 15% fragmentation, it's probably not going to help that much.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in St. Joe on line 3. Hello there. Hi. Hello.
I, too, am one of those newcomers to computers. I have a Windows 98 system that's become very slow. I defrag and scan the C drive at 30-day intervals, and I frequently empty the deleted message file and sent message files, and I've removed excess stuff from my documents folder. So beyond that, can you help me determine what I can do to maybe speed things up?
Well, let's see. Have you downloaded or run any of the programs that look for spyware or adware?
Yes. I go to SpyBot monthly.
And you update that file and...
Yeah.
Okay. So we know that the problem is, or at least it's not an obvious problem with spyware because you get a clean bill of health or at least you clear out things with SpyBot. You might also try, SpyBot doesn't catch all of them. LavaSoft's AdAware is another program that is often used, and you might want to run that periodically as well. Some of them will catch programs that others don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most, the defragmenting. Boy, I don't have any other real good suggestions. That's 90% of the problem. It's you're probably also have you been relatively recently upgrading software? You're running newer software, newer versions of processing and such.
Well, I go to the Microsoft site and well, I download any stuff that they have there.
Okay.
I guess that's for virus and stuff, but.
Well, one other possibility that you might consider is over time you may well be using programs that are putting more demand on memory. Well, the other thing that can slow down a computer is if it doesn't have enough RAM memory, and so the computer operating system has to keep swapping things in and out from the disk to be able to run. If you look at your computer, and you can just do this by looking at the properties of my computer and see how much random access memory it has, or RAM. And if that number is down like 128 megabytes or something, that in itself is going to be a factor in the speed of the computer. That's not where I would tell people to look first, but you've already looked in a lot of the other places.
Okay. And how do I get to the RAM properties?
Do you have an icon for my computer on your desktop?
Yeah.
Right-click on it.
Okay.
And then in the pop-up menu, choose Properties.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere there it should say, probably on that first screen, but I don't quite recall for this version of Windows, it should say something like, 128 meg RAM, 256 meg RAM, something.
Oh, okay.
And that's, if you've got 128, certainly adding more memory will speed things up. Adding much more than, taking it up to much more than 256 for the older machine is probably throwing good dollars after...
Yeah.
After bad.
But 128, that's the max, or that's low?
That's pretty minimal.
That's minimal.
Yes, that's people running present-day operating systems and software would not be at all happy with 128. Things would slow to a crawl.
Okay, so that's the lowest I want to go.
Yes. Well, that's lower than you want to go, actually.
Okay, below capacity.
For an older machine with relatively recent software running on it, I would suggest, again, looking at the dollar cost and how much you're going to spend now to versus in the future to get a new machine, going up to at least 256 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah. What about emptying the recycle bin?
That certainly can free up extra disk space. That's the sort of thing you should do before you defragment, but that in itself shouldn't really have much of an effect on the speed of the computer.
And how do I do that?
Right-click on the recycle bin, and one of the options will be to empty recycle bin.
Okay, I click on recycle bin. And where is recycle bin?
Well, you should actually have the recycle. There should be an icon someplace out there on your desktop for the recycle bin.
Really? Oh, okay. Desktop. Okay. Okay, great. Okay, thanks a lot for your time.
Okay, next we talk with a listener in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about remote access. We're in the country and we are on dial-up, which is extremely slow.
Right.
And what options are there? I know there's satellite, but other than that, we're too far out for wireless right now. Any other options?
So you're too far out for something like Prairie iNet, then, I take it, which is a they post antennae on silos and...
As far as I know, we are. I've checked with at least one wireless company, and we're about a quarter of a mile outside their range.
Okay.
I haven't talked to Prairie Inets.
Well, try that. I mention that because they're primarily Illinois, and I guess they also have some.
I think maybe I looked them up on the web, and they don't have. They're not in our area.
Not in your area. That may be as well. Well, unless there are other companies, which city are you closest to?
Champaign. We're about 5 miles north of Lake Meyer.
Okay. If there aren't any, sometimes old-fashioned resources work pretty well. Look at the phone book under Internet Service Providers, since we just had a new phone book within the last couple of months or so, and see if there are any Internet service providers listed. You could also do a search online for Champaign or for Illinois. You'd probably want to get Champaign or Urbana in there in that search as well for Internet service providers. And if you're outside the range of some that we know are here, Prairie Inet for one, then and you don't find anything else listed, you're pretty much going to be limited to dial-up or the satellite service, which, of course, is fairly expensive.
Yeah, and it includes a lot of things that we don't really need.
Right.
So we are on SBC for our telephone, and I've been told that SBC is planning to do a lot more with DSL.
Well, and they are, because I live in an area of Champaign, a little bit south of Champaign, that for years did not have DSL and now does. And, of course, when they first come in, they make a really good offer to people to get them to sign up. So it's certainly to the telephone company's interest to expand that service as much as they can. It just requires more equipment and more cost and more time for them to do it to outlying areas.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of houses on our road, so
So you're not high on their priority list.
No, but they just relayed the cable last summer, and I asked the guys relaying the cable, I said, does this mean, you know, we can get internet and so forth? And they said, no.
Yeah.
It just meant hopefully the phone wouldn't die as often.
Well, that's a start.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I don't have any real good solutions other than the satellite, if indeed. And you might want to check, because sometimes these internet service providers may have expanded their coverage areas since the last time you checked.
Yeah, I try to keep checking, but that's a good idea about every few months to see if they're expanded to us yet. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, well, keep your
good luck.
Keep our fingers crossed for you. Next caller, Rantoul. We have to be quick, though. We're coming down on time. Line two, hi.
Hi. You had a person with the ME problem?
Yes.
Fragmenting. What I've done is boot into the safety mode, and then it asks you, do you want this message repeated? I say no, and just let it defrag. That's all.
Okay, great. And so now it keeps right on running then.
Yeah.
Good deal. I should have thought of that,
elegant,
but I didn't.
Elegant solution. How about that?
Go into safe mode and let it run. Thank you for updating us.
Okay. Well, now no more calls today because we only have a couple minutes left. But I wanted to ask you, you know, in terms of gizmos and gadgets, there's all this stuff out there now, and it seems like every time you turn around, it's new and improved.
It is.
And now we've got phones that are getting smaller and smaller, and they have digital cameras and camcorders and M3P players and GPS in this one little thing.
Mm-hmm. And if you lay it down carelessly, you may never find it so small.
So what's the half-life of all this electronic gear today?
Oh, well, the facetious answer is the half-life is about a week after you buy it.
Yeah,
and then the next one. But if you wait for 3 months, there will be no new announcements until right after you've made your purchase.
That's how it is.
That does seem how it is. There are some fairly nice gadgets, and in many cases, you just live with what you've got until there are enough incremental changes. You know, there was a bit on the late night show the other night about, you know, here's my collection of old iPods, and it was like a photo wallet of grandchildren. It was about 10 or 15 long. One thing I will mention just real quickly.
Sure.
For $20 for some of these pocket-held devices, there is a little projector. It uses Bluetooth technology, so if you've got your little Windows Pocket PC or something of that sort, and it will project a keyboard onto any flat surface, and you can actually type on that. and it will respond that. It can handle up to 400 characters or so per minute, and it is $20, and it is just, it hooks. It's called the LaserKey 850, just announced at CES. It runs with Windows on the smartphone, on a Pocket PC, on the Palm OS, and for $20. Doesn't really matter if they update it a little bit later on. Why not go ahead and do this thing? Because those keyboards are getting so small.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing, too, with this. The phones are so small.
People are getting thumb problems.
You have to. Those of us who are all thumbs, it's a problem.
Well, you know, people who are all thumbs ought to be able to do it pretty well.
Well, thanks, Peter, for joining us this month, and we'll see you in March. How about that?
Time marches on.
Peter Kimball has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. And our monthly discussion of Computers in You takes place once a month on the third Thursday of the month. Greg Klein will be with us on the third Thursday of February. It's 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, and Jay Pierce is with us this afternoon to tell us what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade.
That's right. Thank you much, Les. When you're all thumbs like me, what you do is you push all the buttons at once, and you cause all kinds of things to happen. Amazing stuff.
Okay.
Well, Kansas City wheat, first of all, the March contract had a high of 383.5, a low of 373.25, settled at 383, up 10.25 today. July wheat at Kansas City had a high of 382, a low of 374.75, settled at 382, up 7.5. On the Board of Trade, March wheat had a high of 328, a low of 321.5. The settlement was 326.5, up 4. The May contract, a high of 338.5, a low of 332.5, settled at 337, up 3.5. The July contract had a high of 348, a low of 341.5. The settlement was 346, up 3.5. And September wheat on the Board of Trade, 406, also had also was up 3.5. The high today was 357, the low 351, the settlement 356, again up 3.5. And December of 06 had a high of 369.5, a low of 364, even 368.5 was the settlement, up 3.25. Corn for March, a high of 207, a low of 204.75, the settlement 205. That was down 3/4. The May contract also down 3/4 at the close. The high today 216.25, the low 214.5, the settlement 214.75, again down 3/4. July corn had a high of 225.25. The low today was 223.25, the settlement 223.75, that was down 0.5. September corn had a high of 234, low of 232. The settlement was 232, down 1. December 06 had a high of 244. The low was 242. Settlement 242.25, down 1. And March 07 corn had a high of 250.5, a low of 249.25. 249.5 was the settlement, down 3/4. March oats had a high of 188, a low of 185. The settlement 187.75. That was up 2.75, and the May contract closed up 2. The high today 184, the low 182, the settlement 183, again up 2. Soybeans for March, a high today at 568.75, the low was 564, settlement 565, that was down 3/4. May soybeans had a high of 578, low of 574, settlement 574.75, unchanged. July, 587 was the high. The low was 583. Settlement, 584. That was down 0.5. The August beans closed up. The high today, 589.5. The low was 587. Settlement, 587.25. Up 1.25. September 06 beans closed up 3/4. 591.25 was the high. 588.25 the low. 588.25 was the settlement. Up 3/4. November 06 had a high of 597, a low of 593.5. Settlement was 594.25, down 0.25. March soybean meal had a high of 178.80, a low of 177.50, settlement 178.40, and that was up 90 on the day. And the May soybean meal had a high of 180.80, low was 179.60, 180.50, the settlement up 80. Soybean oil for March, the high was 21.33, the low 21.06, Settlement, 2108, down 8. And the May soybean oil contract, high today, 2165, low 2143. Settlement, 2147, down 13. And now with a look at how things closed on the Mercantile Exchange, back to you, Celeste.
Okay, livestock prices were higher today on the Merc. January feeder cattle, the high 112.50, the low 112 even, the settlement 112.45, that up 67 and a half. March 111.87 and a half, the high 111 even, the low, the settlement 111.70, that up 50. April 112.65, the high 111.80, the low 112.32 and a half, the settlement, that down 2 and a half. February live cattle 96.35, the high 95.57 and a half, the low, the settlement 96.12 and a half, that up a nickel. April live cattle 94.80, the high 94.25, the low 94.65, the settlement, that up 15. February lean hogs 59.15, the high 58.07 and a half, the low 58.65, the settlement, that up 50. April 64.20, the high 63.05, the low 63.57 and a half, the settlement, that up 57 and a half. May 66.95, the high, the low 66.35, the settlement 66.80, that up 52 and a half. June lean hog 70.10, the high 69.25, the low, the settlement 69.85, that finishing up 55. And February bellies 82.65, the high today 80 even, the low finishing at 82.55, that up 82 and a half. And as soon as my screen refreshes here, I will tell you what's happening on Wall Street in terms of the Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ. But it is loading very slowly. So we've got an important message here, and then we'll come back to that.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
It would be wrong to murder someone who has devoted herself unselfishly to promoting understanding of the Iraqi people.
The kidnapping of journalist Jill Carroll shows the perils facing those trying to get news out of Baghdad. The dangers for journalists in Iraq, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 Central on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
The Dow is up 42 points at 10,897, the S&P 500 8 higher at 1286, and the NASDAQ is 25 higher at 2305. 2 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, you're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. You'll find us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director. Today, the producer for the Afternoon Magazine is Harriet Williamson. Mike Sola's forecast for Illinois and Indiana, very spring-like day this afternoon. Today, partly to mostly sunny this afternoon, highs ranging from 47 in northern Indiana to 64 in southwestern Illinois. Tonight, south, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Elsewhere, becoming mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 27 in northwestern Illinois to 50 in the far south. Tomorrow,